Welcome to the roundtable this morning. As you may know, we've been switching things up here on the program. Each day, we now start off with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond, something we are calling the roundtable on the roundtable. Why do we call it that? Because we're very original. Joining me for the discussion, yes, very creative. We welcome it's the book show. We welcome WAMC's Dr. Alan Chartok, assistant professor of journalism at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo. Both are fresh from duking it out on the media project, so they are primed and ready to go at it with us. WAMC Morning Edition host David Gustina joins us again, and it is wonderful to have you all here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
And speaking of the media project, we definitely ought to have Rex on because, you know, he pretty well knows everything, and it would be great to...
Rex is joining us on Tuesday.
Oh, great.
Rex is joining us on Tuesday.
And he's still duking it out from the media project.
They have a new press, and they are going to be talking about that, and Mike Spain and George Hurst. And
something that seems to go against what's happening in journalism.
Absolutely. So we'll talk about that on Tuesday on this program during the panel, and we look forward to that. We have several topics that we want to dig into this morning, and we're really going to be all over the map. I invite you to join us. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, and you can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable, and our Sarah LaDuke will be on later in the program to weigh in on a couple topics and also to tell us what is coming up. So we look forward to that as well. Let us begin with what is breaking news and the story that David and all the news outlets, of course, have been reporting all morning, and that's a story out of Herkimer. The suspect in Wednesday's fatal shootings has been killed by police. Police say after nearly 19-hour standoff, police officers this morning swarmed the building where shooting suspect Kurt Myers had been holed up since Wednesday afternoon, and he was shot dead. It's a tragic story. Residents of Herkimer are puzzled why owner Kurt Myers went into a barbershop and opened fire, killing two customers and wounding two others at a car care shop a mile away. He killed two more. Residents say that they really barely knew him. One person called him just an odd little man. Meanwhile, more information is coming out on the men shot yesterday in the neighboring villages of Herkimer and Mohawk. Those killed include a veteran prison guard, a retired correction officer, and a car care worker who played guitar at his local church. So a tragic story all the way around. And this happens in the center of a state that is, like many other states in the country, trying to deal with the issue of guns.
Correct me if I'm wrong, which I know you will do, this whole approach by the gun lobby, which is to say, we're going to protest this because we don't think a message of necessity, which is the way they got it through real quickly, which I happen to think is one of the few times a message of necessity was ever justified, because this is a terrible, terrible thing that is happening in this country and in this state. And of course, the judge threw it right out. Now, I'm sure they'll appeal, but I have no doubt that this thing will survive because it's one of the worst things that happens. And as you know, there's a lot of copycatting that goes on here. Somebody reads about it, then they think somebody's talking to them, a higher power is talking to them. They go out and they do it. We've just got to do something about this. And Governor Cuomo is exactly right in his approach.
One of the other interesting aspects of this is shooting occurs, of course, in central New York, and right nearby in an adjacent village of Ilion, you have the Remington Arms factory where they're making guns. And a lot of folks in that area have been employed and made their livelihoods working there.
It is one of the things that I tried to find out before we went on the air. I was unable to find it. I don't know if you saw it, but do we know the type of weapon?
I haven't seen that report.
It seems to me that one of the worst disservices of the NRA, among many, has been to completely clamp down on research on gun violence. So in this story, for example, we know nothing about the motivation, about the way he acted. There's no profiles that we have of many other crimes. And that's the result of the NRA saying, no, it tramples my rights to even research this stuff.
Well, we feel that. I mean, I think most of us, I mean, we still, after Newtown, don't know what caused that man to walk into that school and to kill those students. We just don't know.
Right. And the authorities are not helping us to know. And that's a case where the records, the police records, the investigative records have all been shut down, even though there's no ongoing investigation. There's nobody to charge anymore. So why don't we know? Why aren't we getting it?
And of course,
knowledge is power.
So let me take it one step further. Mm-hmm. With that knowledge being power, so with that knowledge, we would do what? What would that allow us to know? Because we knew more about what happened in Tucson. We knew more what happened in Colorado. How does that knowledge become power and help us?
I think the debate in New York has shown how the knowledge would help. There's wide disagreement on whether it will help to ban automatic weapons or certain types of them. We don't really know for sure. And what kind of mental illness, if there's mental illness at all, is involved? Do we tramp on the rights of all people who have mental illness, perhaps keep them from getting help because we're worried about only a few? We don't know.
And yet you see in the SAFE law, it's seen as a solution. In
exactly.
other words, if the mental health professionals can turn over someone they suspect might be about to do some violence, that's part of this law, and the VA has already come out and said they're not going to comply.
That's a heavy-handed measure. It's been rightly criticized, and the problem with it is not researched. So I pin it again. I put it all back to the NRA.
Well, it's one of the things, too, where you try to figure out in your mind, and this is a hard thing for us to do, but we try to figure out what would be the motivation for someone to burn down their house,
mm-hmm.
to go to a barbershop, to go to a garage, and to act in this way and to shoot people who you don't know.
And then, of course, comes the other question, which is the general availability of guns. In other words, how many are out there? How many are accessible to somebody? You know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have left the gun out, says a parent. And we see this again and again and again. And if you just start to cut down by all of these measures on the number of guns out there, will you be cutting down on some of the violence? Not all of it, but some of it.
Mm.
And here again, we often hear the case that, well, okay, Maybe in this case the gun was purchased legally. Maybe he owned the gun legally. We don't know. But does in that case does it matter because it was still?
Well, that's it. I mean, if you can't look inside someone's head and know what they're going to do in this regard, and I think that's why authorities' hands are tied in this case, and probably the right thing to do for those therapists is to stay in confidence with their patients. But Alan, you pointed out in your commentary that sometimes there's got to be a way for someone to say this could be an explosive situation.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling that many of the people who are therapists will know where that line is.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell them that as soon as somebody says, oh, I'd like to kill that guy. A lot of people have said that in their lives, that you have to report
it.
That you have to report it to the police. I mean, you know, I do believe that our therapeutic community knows where that line gets crossed.
The Veterans Administration seems to think they know. They have announced they're going to defy New York's...
Well, that's what David was just saying. And I have a feeling that is going to be the path for all the other federal agencies that have some jurisdiction.
How have we covered it as journalists? I mean, have you been watching the coverage? Rosemary, do you have any thoughts on that?
The coverage of the gun
shootings
statute,
in general?
Well, I'm interested in what happened yesterday because we see the shots are fired and we all make a beeline to Herkimer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're told immediately that the governor's going to have a press conference at 2 o'clock and then at 2:15 and then at 2:30 mm-hmm. and then 2:35 right. and then 2:40 and then 3 o'clock and then 3:30 and then we're in at 5 o'clock. And there's a situation, you know, that is still very much going on,
alive.
And you have a governor who is there, and it became a very weird story because you didn't
weird.
Know quite what to do.
I was going to ask you what you thought about the governor being there. Was
should he
the
question
exploiting
is,
it?
Should he have been there?
Exactly.
You know, recent polling have shown that while people have great respect for the things, the accomplishments of the governor, that they think he's too ambitious. You know, in other words, does this look like showboating? That becomes the question. And I don't know the answer to that. I think this may be as Dave Gustina pointed out before, a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. If you don't go, looks like you don't care. You know your numbers are upstate numbers aren't that good. You know that the gun people are much greater in power upstate than they are in New York City, and therefore you do it at your own risk.
I'm wondering, and you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, it certainly is, there's a timing. Once the situation is resolved, to immediately be there to help the community heal, commend the forces that were there, that were working on the front lines, seems to me different than actually being there when it's going on.
Yep.
Because all eyes were then on the governor and not so much what was happening within the village of Herkimer, to take this man into custody.
Sure, to go back to your media emphasis, you know, breaking news story is very distinct from covering news overall. I mean, you're there and you just grab whoever you can, you cover whatever's happening. It's pretty random in a breaking news situation. So the governor coming there, that's it. That becomes the event. It shuts down looking at a whole lot
of
things.
I heard one of our people in the newsroom commenting, and this has been, and you've talked about this on the Media Project, what shootings get covered? We had two girls shot in the Albany area recently, and you know, how do we decide what shootings get the coverage and what lives are valuable, let's
say, and whether or not the skin of those shooting victims is black or white, which becomes a very important criteria and sort of a very awful part of what happens here. But speaking of coverage, Rosemary Armeo, you know, yesterday something else was going on, which was this huge question of the Pope. I know we're going to get to that, but my question to you is, does that diminish the kind of attention that we should be paying to a story like this when everything seemed to be the Pope yesterday?
It might have the opposite effect, that people are so sick of Pope coverage that they looked for this as a...
I don't know. I looked at the tabs this morning. I never saw anything like it. You know, it looked like 10 pages of both the Daily News and the New York POST.
Yeah.
You know...
well, I do have to say, I mean, if you consider this, whether this is a national story or a local story, so you consider it a regional story for us, and
The Pope is an international story.
Although the Today Show did cover it as the second story in the lead this morning,
and
after
the
Pope.
And yesterday, the network seemed to be doing 50-50.
Yeah.
They were breaking away from the Pope
to bring updates, to bring the
press conference from the governor. So they were going back and forth, and so it's an interesting of how it was covered.
Well,
and
what do you
duality.
Think, Ellen? Do you think that the Pope detracted from the shooting or vice versa?
Well, you know, I don't know about you, Rosemary, but when I'm teaching these classes, these journalism classes, and I always say to my students, okay, I want to show you what this means. What else was going to be in the newspaper the day that Kennedy got shot?
Yeah. Right.
You know,
sure, you always hated to have a project that was due to come out on the day of a big event like that.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll continue this conversation and talk about some more of these issues coming up. We, of course, welcome you, Roundtable, WAMC.org, and you can also tweet us at WAMC Roundtable or go to our Facebook page. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. On the Roundtable, we have a wonderful panel assembled here today. Joining us, Dr. Alan Chartok, Assistant Professor of Journalism at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo, and our WAMC Morning Edition host, David Gustina, and talking about all kinds of issues. When right before we went to the break, we were talking about media coverage. We were talking specifically about the shooting in Herkimer as compared, also, you know, the dual stories that were going on yesterday afternoon. It was not a slow news day by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
We had the shooting in Herkimer and also the election of a new pope. I will tell you that in our newsroom yesterday, there was a great deal of frustration, and this is still a bit of a head-scratcher for me, as to why our network, the National Public Radio Network, chose to be the only major news outlet, not only in this country, but in the world.
In the world.
Not to carry and have live coverage of this election of the Pope. Now... I want to bring this in on a lot of different fronts. One, what Alan mentioned of seeing the tabloids and seeing, you know, 10, 15, 20 pages. Mm-hmm. Yes. But that moment when you come out and the world is watching.
Definition of news.
And we've been sitting there watching a smokestack for 2 days, and they finally come to this very, and I would argue, this very pointed, very finite moment, which is there's a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
When the white smoke goes up, that's where it starts, and the end, the new pope says, thank you very much, good night, and you've got your story. That's it. It's an hour. And the fact that that wasn't covered on this network, on National Public Radio, to me, and I want to know how you all feel on this, was shocking.
Well, you know, Joe, there's some inside baseball here. I don't want to confuse everybody, but, you know, we're very proud of the fact here at WAMC that we play our own programs.
Absolutely.
So Morning Edition. So what they try to do at NPR every once in a while is to give it to one of their afternoon programs and say, if you want it, you have to go with their brand. So you have to say, the name of some program, and that if you want
that
it,
we don't carry.
That we don't carry. We've been yelling at them about this for years. On other things, Joe, you're quite right. Other breaking stories, they give you a host, you go to NPR, and they carry it for a while. This was a disgrace on the part of National Public Radio.
7 years ago, they offered us what they call unbranded coverage,
exactly.
Which is you go to a special events channel that we can tune into, and there will be anchored coverage. Although yesterday, I would have taken unanchored coverage. That would have been fine.
Yes.
But they had anchored coverage of it 7 years ago. This time, they did not communicate as to what they were going to do. Finally, they did communicate and say that it was just going to be taken care of in the news magazines. And I have to say, at the beginning of of All Things Considered, when they say the world was listening as bells rang throughout the Vatican Square, and I thought, yes, bells that we couldn't hear because you weren't carrying it.
So this was not a snafu. It sounds like a real policy decision.
Oh, no, it was a policy decision on their part only include it within the context of the news magazines. Now, I mean, to Alan's point, this just so happened it happened during this one news magazine. Had it happened at a time when it wasn't, then we can only assume that it would have only been covered during newscasts because that's the policy that they had.
Yep.
So it's mind-boggling to me, and we got beaten up for it.
Well, I was going
to
just say,
calling up,
it goes
saying,
one
you know,
step
where's
further.
The coverage?
Our credibility is on the line when the network screws up.
Well, let me just explain to people who may not know that Joe, in addition to doing this masterful job on the roundtable, is also our vice president for news. So when he says, I would have been happy, he's not kidding. He's the news guy.
I don't know. Rosemary, I'll go to you. I mean, do you find that to be shocking?
I do. I know that there are plenty of people, maybe beyond WAMC's listenership, who say, oh, enough on the Pope.
Absolutely.
There's no question. And so they would say, great, you don't really need it. But this is, by just any measure of news, a momentous event. It's the selection of an individual who will have, for better or worse, whether you like it or not, a lot of impact on world events. It's a medieval institution. This goes back hundreds of years, this whole selection process and the pageantry and all of that. It was emotionally important that we have the first Latin American pope. There's no way you can justify not covering this as a breaking, important live event.
And to put it mildly, we sent them a lot of money at National Public Radio, approaching $1 million now. And they have, here we trust our people. They put out stories. They have some editing. But basically, we don't kill them. There are so many producers at National Public Radio that they have to get out of their way, each other's way. It's just unbelievable. So they could have done this.
It's almost becoming, and I mean, I don't mean to... I was going to say the bite the hand that feeds us, but I guess it doesn't really feed us.
We feed
them, right. So, but one of the things that I was just fascinated by was that, I'm connected on my phone. I've got a CNN update. I've got a New York Times update. I have all of these alerts. And it was at 7 minutes after two, ding, white smoke, ding,
right.
White smoke,
yep.
Ding, white smoke.
Right.
42 minutes later, NPR comes out and says there's white smoke.
Well, you know, what you're saying is that this is not only a bad news decision, which we've all agreed on, but it's also a bad commercial decision, a competitive decision.
Yeah, it's just, absolutely.
You look bad.
And
I'll be interested to see, have they come out with anything, Alan, saying, explaining what's going on?
Now, could we have done better? Probably. We were reaching out like crazy. Usually our colleagues at News Channel 13, for example, will give us what they've got, but they can't give you their network. They can only give you what they're doing.
And the same thing with YNN. We have a lot of but here again, I think there was, and this is where the assumption gets you, because we would have been able to subscribe to the
some
BBC.
Had
we known in advance that NPR was not going to cover it, but we never really got that because we had to go badger them, and by that time it was too late. But it was that was quite. We didn't really get answers from them until after the announcement had been made.
And who writes the letter, you or me, or both of us?
Well, I have one ready to go, and I think you, Let's go. Let's sign it.
Does NPR still have an ombudsman, or have the Post? Have they done away?
Please,
this would be a topic for.
Don't even get me started.
I want to talk about NPR a little bit more later on. We'll get into that and about their future. But we have many other issues to talk about. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break and invite you, of course, to join us. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. The Roundtable and the Roundtable will continue after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. On the Roundtable, we have a wonderful panel with us. Alan is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
Rosemary Armeo, Assistant Professor of Journalism at the University at Albany and frequent co-host of The Media Project. Hello, Rosemary.
Hello to you.
WAMC Morning Edition host David Gustina. Good morning, David.
Check.
And
all of you out there.
And all of you out there. And we would love, of course, for you to join us. Roundtable at WAMC.org, or go to the Facebook page or the webpage or tweet us. All of that is in gear and ready. Sarah LeDuc, our wonderful producer, will be in about 10 minutes to update us on what people are saying. All right. Let us talk about, I haven't done this yet. We're only in week one, so I'll let you guys decide which one you want to do. Do you want to do H&R Block, or you want to talk about the Nano College? What would you vote
for?
Well,
I'm jonesing for Nano College.
Okay, so, your affiliation. All right, so let's go with that. We'll
proximity.
Probably get to both of them,
okay.
But let's talk about that.
Before we even do that, I want you to know I worked for a congressman once. He used to send out a thing every day, every year, about do you want more foreign aid or do you want a lot more foreign aid? And everybody would hand back the thing, send back the thing, say, we want no foreign aid. You get it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but those
do you have another
your...
topic you'd like
yeah.
to bring?
So those are the two choices. Yeah. You
okay.
can have fish or meat.
Do you want scrambled eggs or scrambled eggs?
Absolutely. Yes. I'm giving you the two choices. All right.
And if you choose.
And if you've printed stuff out, I'll play along. That's fine. Okay. So the state has drafted plans to make the $14 billion University at Albany's College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering its own campus, with CEO Elaine Calieros as its president. The Associated Press reported Wednesday that it had obtained a copy of a proposal to make the Nano College a specialized college. Much like the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry in Syracuse, the Nano College is unusual compared to other SUNY institutions in that it invites the world's leading computer chip manufacturers such as IBM and Intel to use its high-tech clean rooms and labs for cutting-edge research alongside its facility, scientists, and students. That from Larry Rulison's wonderful article explaining all of this in this morning's Times Union. Rosemary, since you were so quick to the draw on this, I will go to you first. What do you make of this announcement?
I am fascinated by the Nano College. It is just shrouded in mystery, and I think the next step after this is it will succeed and become a separate state.
Yes.
It's great, Rosemary.
It is already. This is de facto right now. This is just going to make official what already is the case. UAlbany has no control over the college. My students were in humanities. How low is that compared to nanotech? You know, we don't bring in nearly as much money. They know nothing of what goes on there. They're not welcomed over there. You drive onto that part of the campus. It's already physically separated from the rest, and you're questioned by a guard about whether are you lost? What are you here? It's just, it does not feed into the grant making on the university. I really.
When you drive down Fuller Road from I-90, and they move the road for it.
You remember that the Times Union, Larry, the same reporter, was trying to get information on what was going on.
And stonewalled
could
for
not,
months.
Even though, you know, public changing public roads, money for public road private, that's completely public record, and yet it was kept quiet. It's everything about
this private partnership.
I'm sure it's wonderful, but why is it so close?
Well, I don't know. You know, okay, so you're driving down that road, and you look to the left. Oh, you look to the right, and you see this shining
ship.
City on the hill.
Yep.
And it's green, and it's blue,
you
and it's
ship.
Shiny.
Didn't you say ship?
Looks like it's got a ship mast on it.
It does. It looks just like a ship.
I want to make that clear.
Peter Paul. Like a,
yes, I did say ship. Definitely.
Okay. So there is the and there's the shining city on the hill, and then you look to the left, and you see the State University, which you know.
There it is.
There it is. And yes, there have been improvements. Yes, there is
much construction
on the campus. But you do think to yourself, wow, these are very separate. You know, these do not seem to be merged in any way, shape, or form.
Which from the student body that I speak to, I don't know what you hear from the students, and they do stories for us. They're very interested in why there can be a lot of money being spent over here, programs being cut over here, and other construction going on.
Well, it really does lead to a much, you know, I'm Professor Emeritus at that very institution. David, you teach there.
Yep.
I can tell you that from the very beginning, this guy Calieros has been given tremendous power because he brings business into the university. And the whole question of business and the university is one that we are facing nationwide. Have our university centers stopped being centers of learning and started being places which are being recruited for business development? You want to be a successful college president now. That's what the governor wants from you. I'll tell you that right now. And that is a major issue. When I have said, let's look into this whole thing, I've been told layoff by a lot of people. It's too scary. This guy is too powerful. Every single governor that there is, Pataki and Cuomo, and I think both Cuomos, although I don't remember how far this goes back, have been really very protective and very insistent that this thing go forward.
Well, it certainly started with the Pataki administration, I believe. Yeah,
sure.
And he, the only story, in-depth story I've ever seen about Calieros, who is the most highly paid official in the state of
in the
New York
whole state
right
in
now,
the state yeah.
was
well,
by James Odato last summer in the Times Union,
right.
And he has a very interesting and secretive background. He was brought up in as basically a spy working in his native Lebanon. I mean, he has a very secretive background, but that's fine if he wants to run it that way. That's fine, but the state has bought into that too.
Well, in the state of the state, the governor talked about these public-private partnerships and going forward, and the idea of having students that come in are trained at a skill and can go right into a job. I mean, what's the role of education? You guys can speak to that.
Well, it could be both.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's both, but we should know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. This is not in any way. My suspicions don't have anything to do with, oh, there's bad stuff going on there. Please don't. I just don't understand why it's mysterious.
You know, I'm sort of backing off in this conversation because my wife works for a firm that moved from another space in downtown Albany to the Nano campus, and they were lured there and are a part of that. So, you know, I have some familiarity of what's going on in their, you know, in their part and so forth. But I will say that
good that you disclose that, by the way. Bravo.
But yeah. I do think that question as, okay, we're one part of this. We're here in this part of the real estate, of knowing what's going on in the other part of the real estate is, you know, that secretive, but, you know, yeah, they're all in their little bubbles.
And even though this measure is only a proposal right now, I mean, the faculty governance and university governance does not affect NANA right now. They are separate. They are de facto separate. And here's one other thing. What is wrong with the idea of this very profitable, very forward-looking institution, which is part of the same campus? Mm. Why can't it support UAlbany? You have a moneymaker who could generate support for an institution at a time when we need money for institutions. Why is that a bad thing?
Yes, right. And then the other question real quickly is the tail wagging the dog? And I mean that because we had a wonderful college president at SUNY at Albany, Karen Hitchcock. I would love to know, because I think some of these very issues we're talking about came into play at the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. There has been great growth at that facility of bringing in whether it be Tech Valley High School and other organizations within under the roof. What is the advantage to doing something like that, in your opinion?
From the point of view of UAlbany, I don't know. I haven't seen that advantage. And also, here's one other thing. It's a university. So what's the research at? What are the great papers, the great innovations that have come out of nanotech? I don't know. We had a candidate come in not long ago last summer looking for a communications job, and he was from North Carolina and also another nanotech or technology center. And he was unaware that we had a nano college in Albany, which I found amazing.
Yes.
Well, see.
I don't know. I have questions, no answers.
Yeah, yeah. See, if I'm Andrew Cuomo, I'm saying we want to be the nanotech
center
capital of the world.
And
in order to do that, we have to give them what they want. And we don't know what they want, and we don't know how much power they have, although we can certainly have our opinions.
I have no problem with making deals to bring in business and technology and the possibility of advance. No problem at all. But you pay a price for that kind of privilege, and I think it should be transparency.
And what does it do, as I said before, I don't want to come around another time, but what does it do to the concept of education for education's sake as opposed to education for business sake?
I'm nodding my head.
I do want to move on in just a second and take a break, but I just want to read a paragraph from Larry Rulison's article from the Times Union this morning. The Nano College has been caught in a power struggle below the surface with UAlbany in recent years. The Nano College has hired high-profile UAlbany professors for its Albany Nanotech campus, and it recently grabbed Tech Valley High School, a major tenant at UAlbany's East Campus in East Greenbush, a move that enraged university officials and supporters. On the same day the Tech Valley High School move was announced, the Nano College also started replacing the university at Albany in its name with just SUNY. A move that also raised suspicions and begged the question of whether the Nano College was seeking to become its own.
Well, campus. I mean, I just think that's so plain. He doesn't report to anybody at UAlbany. He reports to the chancellor.
He makes more than the governor.
Well, it'll be fascinating to see what happens.
And obviously,
this is a draft proposal, so we'll see what actually happens. We are going to take a break. Sarah will be in a moment and tell us what's on your mind, and we'll talk about a couple of other topics. Yes, Alan?
I'm glad we had this little talk.
You can join us by emailing roundtablewamc.org. You can also comment on our web page or Facebook page, or by tweeting us at WAMC. Roundtable will return after the short break. Welcome to the Roundtable. Sometimes when the conversation gets started, we can't stop it because we get all wound up. Though we have breaks, we want you to be the same way and share with us. You've got quite a nice list of paper there, Ms. Ledoux.
A list of paper?
Yeah, I don't know. List of tweets or Facebook comments.
People have been writing in a bunch today.
Excellent. Sarah Ledoux is our wonderful producer and joining us this morning. Good morning, Sarah. So what are people saying?
People are saying in regard to the NPR not offering us coverage of the naming of the Pope. Claire said on Facebook, "I don't know who writes the letter to NPR, but it seems as a listener, I would like to sign it as well.
And well, there's an idea. A petition.
Right in there.
A petition.
Put it right in there. Yeah,
yeah, write it in.
Attach it. Staple it.
Rich said via email, I may have missed a moment or two, but it appears to me that NPR snubs WAMC news coverage of local events by going to some other nearby affiliate for coverage of some items. Have I missed our byline now and then? Are they being exclusionary for some reason?
Well, we do know, just very quickly to answer that question, we do know that we have gotten in their face more than once, and they don't like it. And we have our suspicions, let's put it that way. you want more? No.
I can give one more?
Sure, there? You're the news.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, yes, I have two things on this. I mean, I swear to you, my plan was not to come in and just bash NPR all morning on this during this hour. But while we're on the subject, number one, I think, you know, in the years that I have been here, it is frustrating from both a news director standpoint and a journalist standpoint to have them call up and say, oh, there's a prison riot in Buffalo. Can you send a reporter out to cover it? And you look at them and you say, you know, do you have a map? You know, are you aware of where we are? Did you look, you know? So there is some of that. And sometimes I don't know how much of it is just ignorance on their part of where they are. But I do think what we have run into is other organizations that are 2, 3, 4 hours away from the stories that we are covering every single solitary day. Those reporters, because they have a close affiliation with the network and NPR and are regular filers, are given those stories and then are called upon us to get our tape and to use our studios to cover those stories for the network.
Yeah. Well,
is that?
No, I certainly agree with that.
Am I telling tales out of school?
No, one other tale, as long as we're telling them. And that is that because, as I mentioned before, NPR spends so much money on itself. I mean, one of the things that they do is they hire lots of producers. And so we had a guy up here who once did a lot of stories for NPR. He loved to do them, but he couldn't cover the regular other stuff that we wanted him to. And then all day long, one or another of these producers would call back and say, please change this, please change that. You know, I mean, they get, because they're there, they have to do something. Put it another way, give a surgeon a knife.
There you go. I Yes.
All right.
I think we can end there on that. What else?
Regarding the shootings in Herkimer from the website, James says, according to some in the gun lobby, during or shortly after such a tragic event is not the time to discuss gun control, gun violence, and what to do about it. We should wait for the horror and sadness to dissipate and then conduct a national public discussion. The problem is these events are happening at such a pace that calm period no longer exists. The time to fix this must be now.
And Governor Cuomo says the only way to get it done is to do it at when these things are happening, because then people understand what the ramifications are.
And Ralph, via email, says, I grew up near Herkimer. I believe the gun used was a shotgun, readily available without a permit. Our gun laws would not have prevented this, but that's not the point. We do need to do something to reduce our culture of gun availability and violence. The SAFE Act is a minimal, reasonable start.
We, of course, would love to hear from you as well, and you can do that.
Any way you can imagine. There's an email, roundtable@wamc.org. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/WAMC Radio. The Twitter account to reply to is @WAMC Roundtable, and we have a post on our website you can comment on. Whichever way you want to go, we're refreshing, and we will see it.
Do you still take phone calls?
No.
No, that's
true. No, it's hotspot today.
That was so yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah,
so 2011.
The Vox Pop is when you hear that.
Okay. So here's Sarah's here, and I want her take on this. That again, I promised that we would talk about another NPR story, and this one I think is we'll put them hopefully in a good light. NPR, this is from the New York Times from Monday, I believe, from their art section. NPR might not seem like the most obvious host of a party at a sprawling South by Southwest interactive conference, but it, like so many other old wine media companies, wants and needs what the conference, part of the South by Southwest festivals, has, which is youthful energy. So NPR chose a bar hovering above 6th Street to kick off Generation Listen, a campaign to make public radio cool in the minds and ears of young people. The party was, like every party here, packed, but the goal was to convince 20-something listeners that NPR is something that they can belong to and may even be worth their donations. So Sarah, when you were 20-something and you were brought into NPR, is this a this is only a good thing, right?
I think it's good. I think NPR, the woman spearheading this is Danielle Diebler. She's NPR's Director of Audience Relations and New Ventures, and she's been working on the idea for 2 years and pitching it within corporate. I had to sell it to the company. The new president of NPR said, you know, go ahead.
It took 2 years? That's academic pace.
No, but the point is that younger people are very much desired to be part of what we do. Often they wait until they get a mortgage before they become interested in the way things are. But we're doing a lot of it here. I mean, look at Ian Pickus. How old is he? 27 years
27.
Old. Our news director, his associate, Patrick Donches, who is right there at the same age. And we're very happy because we think this is the look of the future.
When you think of the programs that fit into that demographic that will bring in the younger listeners, I guess we have enough of them. I mean, maybe not enough of them, but we have a lot of examples.
This American Life, Radio Lab, The Moth Radio Hour. There are segments on every day's episode of Morning Edition and All Things Considered that I think young people like myself or younger would be interested in. I mean, you know, I think they're doing a good job, and I don't know why more people aren't tuning in. But everything, newspapers have this problem. Magazine subscriptions have this problem. All media is having a hard time, is working different ways to figure out how to get young people to not just pay attention, but pay dollars. Donate to public radio, subscribe to magazines and newspapers.
A 2009 study of public radio found that the median age for an NPR news listener was 52. That's up from 47
just 10
years earlier. And classical radio listener is up to 65.
Right.
So
I think
a newspaper and news problem in general.
You know, two things. One, what Sarah was saying, I think is so, I think we probably all see this in our classes when we're teaching, is that, you know, you talk to the kids about what they look at and they say, well, whatever's free. You know, it's not, I'm not paying for a magazine, I'm not paying for a newspaper, I'm not paying for a subscription TV service. I'm only getting what's out there that I can get for free. So here's NPR that is free, and you still, okay, then how do you make that? How do you make that podcast available? How do you make that? How do you make that work? Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. And then I just, as our time goes, and to bring it full circle, not again to re-injure a wound, but do you think, Alan, that a decision by the network to say not cover the Pope is partially because you say, all right, this will maybe not help us in attracting that younger listener?
Could be, but I haven't got a clue. But I can tell you, I think it was incredibly stupid.
When you think of the programs, and I guess the best programs are programs that appeal to everyone, you know, that appeal to young and old and have some diversity. I mean, look, it's what we try to do in this show. It's what we try to do on most of our programming, is that it's not trying to hit any one.
You know, Disney always had that, right? You'd go to that movie with your little kids, and they'd be laughing hysterically, and you'd be getting all the jokes that there's no way a little kid would get. You know, that there, it can be done. You program for all ages.
Well, I've been permanently crippled by Bambi, and that's all I have to say.
Oh, I know. It's so cheerful.
One of the scariest movies I have ever seen in my life.
And if you don't mind,
what happened?
To get back to Bambi.
Everybody gets killed. I'm just kidding. But they shot Bambi's mom.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Was bad. It was horrible. Old Yeller.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of
sad
things.
Stop.
But to take it back to Generation Listen for a second, I think personally an area where NPR is doing really well reaching out to people my age and younger is NPR Music. I think they do a great job. They have, you know, people like Josh Ritter, but also, which I laugh because everybody knows he's already my favorite and NPR is very supportive of him, but Bela Fleck, lots of, you know, jazz musicians, they cover all
fun, Wilco,
all genres,
you know, all everybody.
And they, you know, they get First Listen where you can stream anybody's whole new album. They do a lot of, you know, live streaming concerts, a lot of coverage on music. And I mean, that's saying youth only cares about music, which is not what I mean to say.
No, I like those shows too.
Right.
I'm much older than you, unfortunately, for me.
But it's a way to get in, hopefully, to find the music you like on NPR or WAMC specifically, and then listen to what else they have to offer. Find out what else they're giving you, and you know, keep broadening your horizons that way.
We would love, again, to hear from you. We are just about out of time, so I'm going to let Sarah remind you again of how you can get in touch with us, and then I will thank the panel. But it is, I think there's some really interesting issues that we discuss, and I'm sure many of which we will bring up again. And Rosemary, when before you leave, I know you have to go because you have class. We have students.
Yes.
Put down a piece of paper when you can join us next.
We love
having you here.
You can
it's wonderful.
Us later, yeah.
I got the whole list.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very, very much. How do we tune in once again?
Roundtable@wamc.org is our email. Facebook.com/WAMC Radio is our Facebook page. Twitter, we have most of the shows have their own feed. Ours is @WAMC Roundtable. You can also follow the news and station on the whole at WAMC Radio. And the website, WAMC.org.
And of course, our great thanks to Sarah LaDuke, our producer. Also to Rosemary Romeo for coming in, and you'll hear her back here, but also, of course, on the Media Project on Sunday night. Also, our thanks to David Gustine, our Morning Edition producer, and to
Hey,
Alan.
Joe.
Thank you very much.
I loved today's show. I really did. I thank you, Joe, for doing such a great job.
Well, thank you. Coming up next, we have cool stuff that we'll tell you about in just about 30 seconds. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Newly renovated boutique hotel in the heart of the Hudson Valley. 12 guest rooms with modern amenities and located close to the rail trail and outdoor activities. The1850house.com. And Hudson Valley Foot Associates, podiatric physicians and surgeons treating foot problems with offices in Ulster, Dutchess, Columbia, Orange, and Delaware counties. HVFA.com.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3.